and welcome to Unity Church. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. I'd like to call your attention, as we do each week, to This Week at Unity and the insert in your order of service which seeks to inform you of the many events occurring in the coming weeks here at Unity. Our wonderful Wellspring Wednesday has concluded for this season and will start up again on Wednesday, January 10th. But the staff, along with the 7th and 8th grade youth group, are offering a free evening of child care this Wednesday so that you can drop your children off. They'll have pizza with us and a night of holiday activities. If you're interested in this gift that we offer your parents, you can sign up in the parish hall at the Wellspring Wednesday table. This Sunday is the last Sunday to sign up to participate in our Model Cities holiday gift giving. We still have about 70 people who have not been spoken for. If you're interested in participating in the program but don't have time or the inclination or the willingness to shop, you can still donate money and the coordinators will shop for you. Ginger and I would like to greet you at the Portland Avenue doors at the conclusion of the service. I want to invite any of you who would love to carol with us. Every year, an intrepid group of carolers goes and sings to our shut-ins. We bring them one of the poinsettias from the chancel and sing our little hearts out. And I am living proof that you do not have to be a good singer to come. We will gather in outside the Holly Avenue doors at about 1:45. So if you want to go and then come back, we'd love to have you. I also want to let you know that you are in for a musical treat. One of our classes in religious education has been working with Ruth McKenzie, and they have composed a piece of music themselves, and they will be performing it later in the service, and they rock. Next week, Rob, Teresa, Justin, and I will be conducting the family holiday service, which will focus on Santa Lucia. Please remember that the 9 and 4:30 services will have a civilized carol sing. The 11 o'clock will have what is now the traditional Unity carol shout. And we hope you will join us for the service that fits your tastes and interests. Again, I'd like to welcome you to Unity Church.
The first holiday card arrived last Monday. I love the scripted words on the front. May the song of peace grow stronger. The card is from friends who take the day after Thanksgiving to write holiday greetings. They were at my home the day before, sharing Thanksgiving dinner, a tradition for about 6 years since I moved to a new neighborhood. The guest list changes a bit year to year, but basically, we are a group who have no families in the area. So together, we pool our resources for a potluck celebration. Offering my home for this occasion may seem like a generous gesture, but actually, it is quite self-serving. Having friends in my home space, especially during a holiday, helps me beyond measure in dealing with a house not always comfortable and a neighborhood which often challenges my sensibilities. The painting on the card is an abstract watercolor with mixed greens, blues, blacks, and delicious yellow accents. The casual gestures of color and stroke are turned into art by the hand of a talented brush. I open the card and find a note inside that tells me to make sure to read the small print on the back. The painting, says the words, is called Brush Dance. The even smaller words tell me more. The Brush Dance is a Yurok Indian healing ritual, where being true to yourself means giving your best to help a person in need. Being true to yourself is the one and only Yurok Indian law. This morning, may we find that deep kindness for ourselves and our world in this beloved community. Come, let us worship together.
Standing and join with me in reading responsively number 521 in the back of your hymnal. May I be no one's enemy, and may I be the friend of that which is eternal and abides. May I never rejoice in the ill fortune of one who has wronged me.
May I never fail a friend.
May I May I always keep tame that which rages within me. May I know good people and follow in their footsteps. Thank you. Every Sunday when we gather for worship, we pause for a few moments to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. One of the ways we do this is by lifting up the names of people who we would like to bring into the sacred embrace of this gathered community. We hold in our prayers all those who live with grief over the loss of a loved one. We especially hold Ann Kirby McGill, Dave and Connor McGill, in our prayers over the recent death of Ann's father, Tom. We hold in our prayers those people recovering from recent illnesses, injuries, surgeries, and health problems. We especially hold in our thoughts and prayers Susie McPherson, who is recovering at home and is also here today, I'm delighted to see. So I assume the recovery is going well. And lastly, we hold in our prayers all those around the globe suffering from poverty of spirit, of possibility, those whose lives are filled with uncertainty due to violence, hardship, and war. May we live to see a day when their lives are filled with peace and the promise of abiding freedom. I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or bring into the embrace of this caring and sacred community. For the names which have been spoken, and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for this tapestry we weave together. And now will you join with me in a moment of prayer? O Eternal Spirit, you who we approach by many different paths and call by many different names, help us to have faith when we encounter the reality that everything beyond a certain distance is dark and unknown. This darkness, which is heavy with promise and with challenge, help us to illuminate the darkness with our own peace of divine presence. Let us be open to the miracles that this season brings, that frozen ice broken in pieces on the shore becomes wind chimes as the water ebbs closer, creating a tune of ethereal magic. That the burning bush is resident within the decorated tree, and that our lives can be charged with glory, gladness, and gratitude. May it be so, and amen. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, choir. Thank you, Elizabeth. And I'd like to take this opportunity to invite the children to please stand. We're so glad you came to church today. Thank you for keeping us growing. Thank you for reminding us why we're here. As you leave us quietly now, remember that you go to seek the truth, to have fun, to be together in loving and respectful ways, and to learn from your teachers and each other. You are our bright hope, always with us. You are each and all a blessing to our world. Thank you. And now I'd like to take this opportunity to invite Maureen Phillips to join me up in the chancel.
Good morning. For those of you who may not know me, I'm chair of the Board of Trustees here at Unity Church, and I'm here to talk to you about something that makes me really, really, really uncomfortable. Money. My money and your money. I have to tell you, I run screaming like a banshee out of the room when the phone rings and it's a solicitor or somebody comes to the door. I don't like sales pitches. and I don't like to be told how to spend my money. On top of that, for those of you who don't know me very well, I'm quite a bit of an introvert and generally try not to do these kinds of things like I'm doing right now. So why in the world am I doing this? It's because I love this place deeply. And I think we're at a critical juncture. Once again this year, this church has been blessed by the generosity of many of you who are sitting out there today. For that, we're deeply grateful, and we say a profound thank you. Let me tell you where we sit as of today. We're at 90% of our goal. That means we have about $100,000 more that we need to raise. My message this morning, then, is for those of you who haven't yet had an opportunity to turn in your pledge. Lots of research has been done about the beliefs and attitudes held by various faith traditions towards financial generosity. Some of that work suggests that at the core of these beliefs and attitudes are two questions. What kind of people are we? And what kind of people do we wish to become over the course of our lives? I've asked myself those same questions when I've made my annual pledge. When I ponder that, a whole host of experiences comes to mind that have gifted my family in the 17 years that we've belonged to Unity Church. Please indulge me in just one such story. Both of our kids grew up as beneficiaries of Unity's religious education program and the incredibly wise and committed adults who are at its backbone. For both of our kids, the coming of age program in particular was incredibly powerful and a life-changing experience. They were pushed to question. They were pushed to look inside. They were pushed to be contemplative, to be searchers. Indeed, coming of age frequently sparked dinner conversations at home that were equally rich and defining. Jay and I learned along with them. One day, not long after our youngest daughter, Alexis, completed the coming of age program, I passed through Alexis's typically clothing-strewn room, my blood pressure rising with each step. And then my eyes landed on a note she had written and taped to the wall immediately above the light switch. In bold letters it said this: "How will you live your life so as not to make a mockery of your values?" When I read those words, I of course smiled and tears came to my eyes. Why, I struggle with that same question just about every day of my life. During the remaining years in high school, new posters came and went from Alexis's walls, but that statement, that one piece of paper, remained above the light switch. Who knows where that question came from? I don't. But I am pretty sure of one thing: Unity Church had an awful lot to do with it. As an adult, Unity pushes me to ask the questions: how will I live my life so as not to make a mockery of my values? For that, I feel deeply blessed. This is one of the many reasons why I believe my financial support to Unity is every bit as important as my mortgage payment and my grocery bill. It's my foundation, this place is. This is the place where I'm reminded of my moral compass, the place that nudges me when I don't feel like being nudged, and the place that helps me put the rest of my world into proper perspective. This year, your board will face some very difficult budget decisions. Simply put, we face a dream gap. What we say we want to be, and the staff and programming we've put in place to be that, your dream and my dream, is bigger than our bank account. This is a defining moment, I believe. This is the moment when every single one of us who's part of this beloved community needs to turn inward and ask the question: how important is this place to me? And what kind of people do we wish to become? I have great faith in the strength of this church and the dreams that it holds, and I hope you share that feeling. I hope you, too, will help to ensure that who we are today will continue to be a reality. Thanks for listening to me and for your love and support.
Thank you, Maureen. As you know, the offering each Sunday goes out the doors of our congregation. This Sunday's offering goes to District 202, a community center devoted and dedicated to providing services of all kinds to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth and their allies. I ask you to give generously. Will the ushers please come forward? The work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate our lives and our many offerings.
Dream, oh people, but has it come true? King had a dream, oh people, but has it come true? When you get on the bus, you can sit where you want, but is that the best you can do? This is our hope, oh people, that peace will. This is our hope, oh people, that peace will prevail. That the root of that peace is the justice we seek. It's the hard stuff that makes peace real. Shoo-ba-da, 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 shoo-ba-da.
Dedicated, this is what you have to look forward to. This is one of the many remarkable faces of our religious education program when it interfaces with our remarkable music program. So, will the families whose babies are being dedicated today please join us in the chancel?
We have some guests, too, coming in to see the dedication. As the choir so beautifully reminded us, it is our faith that each child born is one more Redeemer, that each child born comes into the world already whole, already holy, and in need not of cleansing, but of commitment. So when we dedicate children here, we dedicate ourselves to these children and to their parents. And we stay with it year after year after year. We promise you that.
This poem from the poet Rilke. The light of glory shines down from the high things, more powerful than your breath or your feelings. One palace over another palace, from below, from above. Parapets rise out of deeper parapets, finally emerging so high up that you, if you took it in, would be afraid of falling. Meanwhile, the clouds of incense from the burners trouble the air around you, but the most distinct things aim straight at you with their steady beam. And when the next clear flames of the burning lamps play over the elaborate robes that are approaching, could you endure this? But she did come and lifted her eyes and addressed the whole scene. She mounted the stair calmly, knowing who she was, toward this great extravagance which shifted to meet her. Everything that people have already built was already deeply outweighed by the praise that remained in her heart and by the urge to give herself over to the inner presence. Her parents' plan was just to bring her there, present her. The scary man with his chest of jewels seemed to receive her, but she went on through. Small as she was, past every hand, on into her destiny which was now complete, higher than the building, heavier than the whole temple.
We start with the blessing of water. Water collected from all around the world by people from the church. Water to remind you that you come from so many places, that you flow together into one. Next, be blessed by fire, child. You're right, it's hot. It's the light of learning. It won't hurt you, I promise. It's the light of learning. It's the light in your eyes. It's the light of hope. Last, blessed by beauty, child, that you might know self same radiance as a rose, unfolding, always beautiful. And what name have you chosen for this child?
This is Soren Joseph Gabor.
Soren. You want to come to me? No. Soren Joseph Gabor. It's okay. We name you as your parents have named you. Born one more Redeemer.
And what is the name you have chosen for this child?
What name have you chosen for this child?
Amelie Grace Brazelton.
We name you as your parents have named you. Born one more Redeemer.
And what is the name you have chosen for this child?
Penelope Marie Brazelton.
We name you as your parents have named you. One more.
Will you stand now, please, and join us in the celebration of new lives?
It is our faith that each child born is one more Redeemer.
By this service of dedication,
we commit ourselves to the nurture of these children.
Are you ready to dedicate yourselves to Penelope Marie Brazelton, Amelie Grace Brazelton, Casper John Gabor, and Soren Joseph Gabor?
We are prepared. We dedicate our minds and hearts to these children and their parents.
We strive to love and cherish them in times of struggle as well as gladness.
We will love and cherish them always. We acknowledge the divine spark within each child. We build a community in which they will grow old, surrounded by beauty, embraced by love, and cradled in the arms of peace. Please be seated. You stay for a second.
we are celebrating the Advent season this year, we are exploring dimensions of the theme peace. And we have added a meditation to each of these services called a meditation on peace. We began it last week. We will continue it through the Advent season. It begins with, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I breathe out love. When I breathe in, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out love. The choir is going to sing the first verse, and then we are all invited to join with them, and we will sing it through 6 times. Thank you. Amaryllis. A flower needs to be this size to conceal the winter window, and this color, the red of a fiat with the top down, to impress us, dull as we've grown. Months ago, the gigantic onion of a bulb half above the soil stuck out its green tongue, and slowly, day by day, the flower itself entered our world. Closed, like hands that captured a moth, then open, as eyes open, and the amaryllis, seeing us, was somehow undiscouraged. It stands before us now as we eat our soup. You pour a little of your drinking water into its saucer, and a few crumbs of fragrant earth fall onto the tabletop.
That is the only mind by Thich Nhat Hanh. These ramparts of yours, who has promised to build them for you? This morning, suddenly, we find ourselves floating on the ocean amid winds and waves. Suffering itself builds the last shelter in which you will spend the cruelest of nights. Do repeat to me what I have promised. It has been a long time, so that I will be present on that day to serve as your witness. The arrows that struck me, I still bear them in the flesh of my body. They have not been returned. Take good care of your own garden, brother. I am a bird, and like other birds, will only look for fresh water and good seeds. We will be back in your garden. Be the monarch of your life and sign the decree to exile suffering and call back from all points of the universe the power of birds and flowers, the vitality of youth. The whole universe will smile when your eyes smile.
We are empowered by a vision of hope that justice is, in fact, the fundamental reality of the universe. Such a vision encourages work for justice despite the odds of history. From it, we draw strength for transforming history toward justice. And yet, the call is so great. Economic justice, liberation, renewal of the earth, openness to other religions and mutual dialogue. How can we as individuals possibly answer the magnitude of the call? We can only be involved in a portion of the world and one aspect of the work, and our effectiveness seems terribly small. Do we simply concentrate on our own task and hope others will take responsibility elsewhere? In bits and pieces, will the kingdom come? Last Sunday in his sermon, Rob came out as a humbug. Not that any of us were surprised at his pronouncement. Many of us feel like humbugs this time of year, and most of us can identify with those Scrooge-like sentiments when we rush around trying to buy the perfect gift that expresses our feelings for the people who are on our lists. Even those people that we barely know. And I will confess to you that I too have moments of humbugness. Who doesn't? I got a tentative half hand raised in the 9 o'clock. I've got a couple here. Oh, I've got a couple of enthusiastic hands. Well, we're impressed. Because I think that this time is a spiritually confusing time. It's a time when the world itself is telling us to slow down, to wait, to stop and focus on the intangibles in our lives, and yet the messages from the world of humanity are just the opposite and shout a different tune. Bye, 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 do, 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 be busy, busy, busy. Now, yeah, we speak the same language. This is especially true for the people, and often it is the women, who are tacitly put in charge of producing the holidays. At least that's how I feel at my house. I'm in charge of putting on the holidays, and even when I'm feeling like Ebenezer Scrooge, the show must go on. And I pull out the boxes and begin to sort through and drag out. Sometimes I feel depressed, but I know I wouldn't have it any other way. And I want to make that clear. I would not have it any other way. Because I have found as I'm doing this that often the spirit of Christmas finds me, just like it did Mr. Scrooge. It invites me into wonder and into peace. But some years the invitation doesn't come and I am left waiting for it. The holiday preparations feel hollow, and I feel like I'm a failure at the holidays. In the stillness, in the quiet of a peaceful morning, in the quiet of listening for that which does not speak, I sometimes hear messages. Dreams emerge, wonder comes unbidden, love and generosity come just in time to save my marriage once again. We didn't fight over the Christmas tree for the first time this year. But this year, I actually decided to be a little more proactive. So I actually sat down as part of my morning devotional and asked, how can I not just survive this time of year, but actually flourish and deepen spiritually? And I decided to follow the lead of the Dalai Lama and choose kindness. As our beloved colleague Arvid Straube once said, the most important spiritual practice is something that every one of us can do. You don't need to meditate long enough so that your body heat melts the snow. Whether we're young or old, we can all practice kindness. Now, the root of the word kindness is kin, and to be kind is to treat one another as kin, but as we all know, it's often our kin with whom we have the most hurtful and unpleasant relationships. So that gets really complicated and isn't an answer that we need or want. But let's go to the deeper meaning. And kinship does remind us that we are all relatives, that we are all connected on this journey called life. We are all connected in our human struggles to find meaning and purpose, and we are all part of the family of humanity. Kindness, what difference could it possibly bring? It seems so superficial when there's so much at stake in our world. The writer, Aldous Huxley, is best known as the author of that startling book, Brave New World. But in addition to his fiction writing, he was a well-respected scholar of world religions. Later in his life, an interviewer on the radio asked him, "Dr. Huxley, perhaps more than anyone else alive, you have studied the great spiritual and religious traditions of the world. What have you learned?" He replied, "It's a bit embarrassing to have been concerned with a human problem all one's life, and to find at the end that one has no more to offer by way of advice than try to be a little kinder." And I imagine that Houston Smith, our friend and today's most revered scholar of world religions, would agree with Huxley and say, try to be a little kinder. So I have been trying to be a little kinder, a little more forgiving of the small stuff. Now, I've been going to a variety of doctors in preparation for our sabbatical, getting shots in preparation for our trip to India. And normally, I stay very tight-lipped during medical procedures and office visits. I must tell you, I go to the doctor under duress. But now I'm actually trying to engage people in conversation to show appreciation for what they're doing. And what I find is that my little acts of kindness come back to me twofold. I've been privileged to hear hard stories And last week, I heard an appropriate but slightly off-color joke. I've laughed with people recently that I never would have spoken to before, just trying to be just a little bit kinder. And I'm also trying to be a little kinder to myself, which is always a tricky proposition. But again, I ask, what place does trying to be just a little bit kinder have in a world with so much pain and suffering? Am I just fooling myself? Are these efforts to try and be just a bit kinder actually contributing to a form of cheap grace? It feels good in the moment, but it doesn't really challenge us to change or deepen our souls. It's too easy for those of us who live in privilege to be content with personal generosity and kindness while we remain complicit with larger systems of oppression. But we have to start somewhere. The Dalai Lama reminds us of the wisdom of the Buddha, who is reported to have said that there are 84,000 doors to peacefulness and loving kindness in this life. That's a lot of doors to open. And I like to imagine that each act of genuine kindness actually opens one of those doors. In the book, Loving Kindness, John Kabat-Zinn wrote, "If I become a center of love and kindness in this moment, then in a perhaps small but hardly insignificant way, the world now has a nucleus of love and kindness it lacked a moment before. This benefits me and it benefits others." In today's world, it's hard to believe that small acts have anything to do with larger systems at play. Ginger, could I have some water? Excuse me. But I want to tell you a story about some students at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, which, of course, is known as a hotbed of radical activity. So I know you won't be surprised when I tell you this story. A number of years ago, a group of students in the agriculture school were studying the effects, the growing effects of multinational corporations on the global economy. And they decided that they needed to show those corporations and the world that small grassroots actions could still wield powerful results. They carefully chose an issue that they thought had broad appeal, was absolutely necessary for the benefit of humanity, and they hatched a plan. In a small room on the campus of Iowa State in Ames, Iowa, the Nestle boycott was born. Don't tell anyone. No one knows this. It spread from Ames, Iowa, around the globe. Inspired by these students, the boycott brought the Nestle Corporation into account. Now, of course, it took years. It took dogged determination. But as a result of the boycott, Nestle changed their policy promoting infant formula in developing countries. And that we learned, even in today's world, that small acts can ripple out and have an effect globally. In the former headquarters of the Nazi war effort in northern France resides a museum of peace. It was originally built underground as an underground structure to ensure the security and safety of the Nazi staff. Now, the lowest level of the museum is dedicated to the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. Some years ago, walking through the hall, I was struck by what a testimony this place is to individual courage and action. A woman began planting a tree that turned into more trees, which inspired people to plant trees, and eventually over 1 million trees were planted in Kenya. A man spoke out in righteous indignation and became the voice of a movement. The latest recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, Muhammad Yunus, is part of a worldwide grassroots effort in microlending, which provides small loans to poor people who have no collateral and who would not qualify for conventional bank loans. The National Geographic reports that Yunus and the Grameen Bank have enabled millions of Bangladeshis, almost all women, to buy everything from cows to cell phones in order to start and or run their own businesses. Microcredit projects have helped people around the world lift themselves out of poverty. They go on to offer this impressive statistic. In 1997, fewer than 8 million families had been serviced by microcredit worldwide. By the end of 2004, some 3,200 institutions reported reaching more than 90 million clients. Yunus came up with the idea of creating a bank based on microcredit when, as a young economics professor, he lent the equivalent of $27 to each of 42 women who collectively ran a bamboo furniture factory in Jabra. Those women, of course, formed circles of accountability and support. This remarkable work started with a single act of empowering kindness, and the ripple effect from that moment has not ended yet. And microlending isn't just happening half a world away. Community reinvestment projects are springing up all over, including the Twin Cities, and a number of UU congregations are heavily involved in microlending. As Aesop, the writer of fables, said, "No act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted." So in this season of so much rushing, so much yearning for something deeper and better and true, can we view acts of kindness as our attempts to be in partnership with that which is larger than ourselves? Can we see it as one way to get closer to the mystery? Listen to the words of the poet Rumi. "Jars of spring water are not enough anymore. Take us down to the river. The face of peace, the sun itself. No more the slippery cloud-like moon. Give us one clear morning after another. And the one whose work remains unfinished, who is our work, as we diminish, idle, though occupied, empty, and open. Take us to the source of life, of hope, of rebirth. Open our hearts to prepare a place for wonder once more. Take us to the river. Let us touch through small acts the work that remains unfinished. Let us know in our bones that the work is ours to do, and it begins here with our very human efforts just to be a bit kinder. To ourselves, to one another, to the relatives we love but may not particularly like, to our own failures and disappointments, to those who in their own very human way try to be just a bit kinder to us. God is here. God is in the details as well as in the mystery. And that is one of the secrets of the holy, that we are fooled into believing that it is the grand movements and gestures that mark the handiwork of the holy. But it is here and now where we know God. It is in the ordinary moments, the ordinary moments in time, where the holy is exposed in us, in the manner in which we order our lives and the life of our beloved community. May it be so.